welcome everybody, and this is our third go-round as we plunk down and look at different issues from Paul's letter to the Galatians. On Monday, what we try to take a look at is the letter as a whole and note in five different spots where Paul gives us what I consider a contextualized summary of what he claims the gospel of Christ to be. And again, noting that each one of those summaries says a little something different and therefore adds a holistic kind of picture to our understanding of the gospel. Yesterday, we looked at or tried to understand who are those people in Galatia that are causing the problems. And again, the typical name that we give to those folks are Judaizers. And indeed, they are Jewish Christians who want to present the gospel and the Christian message as needing to observe the Mosaic code as well as the gospel. But again, Paul never calls them Judaizers or anything like that. That is, we learned from the context there, my translation is that Paul sees that their work among the Galatians, as he describes them, these are the folks who are unnerving you. And so we wanted to look at, okay, exactly how are these new preachers in the Galatian Christian communities unnerving these people? And of course, Paul sees them simply as opponents, right? And why are they opponents? And the opposition there is between the understanding of promise and the understanding of law. Whereas at times folks want to put law and promise together, Paul wants to make sure that they stay clearly and distinctly separate. And the thing then that comes out of this, and what makes it messy, is that whether you are on the side of promise or on the side of law, there is a sense and understanding of faith. Now, if you are on the side of law and are one of these unnerving ones, and perhaps what unnerves the Galatians a bit, is that faith is understood simply as observance to the law and trying to summarize it again in one word, a sense of commitment. Commitment to the law, its observance, carrying it through, right? Highlighted by the notion of the practice of circumcision. For Paul, if one sees it in terms of promise, then faith comes in terms of reception. It is something which is received and understood primarily in terms of a sense of trust. Finally, we said, given this setup, over here, what function do these unnerving ones play? Well, basically, their notion of ministry is their gatekeepers. And so we ended up our discussion yesterday talking about how we as church and perhaps sometimes the job description of pastors or ministers in a congregation is understood primarily as gatekeepers. So what's my function as the pastor in my congregation? I'm the gatekeeper, figuring who's in, who's out, how we doing here. We haven't talked at all what the function of ministry is on this side. And we'll just leave that in abeyance for a while and see what's going on there.
Would they be gate openers?
Would
they be gate openers?
They could be gate openers. Or they might just rip gates off entirely.
Yeah.
But We'll hold on to that one for a little bit and see what happens. Today, what I want to look at is, right, as our whale joke lets us know, a very earthy question. And particularly for men, a very sensitive question. And you have, right? I mean, you have to ask yourself, what would ever possess an adult male to submit to circumcision? I mean, there's something really has got to be going on there, especially when the culture understands that as disfiguring and deforming and mutilating the beautiful male body. And sorry, women, in Greco-Roman culture, it is the male who is the paragon of beauty. Women are ugly. Right? They don't have the perfect body. And so here you've got, right, why would you want to disfigure the perfect male body? That's the question. So we're going to try to say, what is it about these new preachers and their message that the Galatians find so plausible and so attractive? And again, the evidence from the text itself is pretty slim. So we'll do some detective work here and see how we can put this together. The first text I want to take a look at is Galatians chapter 4, verse 17. Galatians 4, 17. This is how I would translate it, as he's talking about these new preachers, those who are unnerving the Galatians. They zealously court you, but not in a good way. Rather, they want to shut you out, or to say perhaps exclude you, in order that you might zealously court them. Right, so we've got kind of three dynamics up here. Right? They court you, and then there's some notion of exclusion with the final result that you are to court them. Okay, so what would it be in terms of how do they go about courting the Galatians? The hint we have here is from Galatians chapter 3, verse 10, where Paul is quoting from Deuteronomy 27, verse 26. And I'll just read Deuteronomy from the NRSV, which is a pretty good trend. This is Deuteronomy chapter 27, verse 26. It says, "Accursed be anyone who does not uphold the words of this law by observing them. All the people shall say, Amen." Right. So that again, what we've got at work here is this sense that, right, if you do not observe the law, you fall under a curse. You are excluded from the blessings of Abraham. And remember, we looked at that in terms of that commandment to get circumcised and what that's all about. Genesis 17, verses 9 to 14, And the wonderful thing that happens there when you get to the second half of verse 10 is the you singular, which talks about what Abraham should do, changes to you plural. Therefore, everybody is brought into this command and everyone is to do it. So you see, circumcision isn't just for Abraham and his family, but it's for you. And that includes the slave you bring into the house, the foreigner, and all. And so therefore, the opposition here can open that up and say, see, Galatians, that means you too. And so therefore, the exclusion that can happen is that you can be excluded from God's blessings. But that seems a little abstract, right? So what else might be going on here? Others are proposing that what this means is an exclusion from table fellowship and perhaps even the Lord's Supper. And the reasons they give for saying this might be what's going on in the Galatians churches is to say, why else would Paul put in the controversy between himself and Peter at Antioch, which was a table fellowship controversy, unless it had something to say to the Galatian community? And so, therefore, they're saying, okay, well, obviously, that Peter-Paul incident there was one of exclusion, involved table fellowship and perhaps even the Lord's Supper. Maybe that's what's going on here. So that, indeed, if one is not circumcised and observant to the law, one is excluded from the supper. One might even be excluded from the rest of the fellowship within the Christian community. Now, if that's the case, we could see now why the Galatians would want to zealously court them. Because after all, if you are a believer, fellowship with your other believers becomes important, and certainly the Lord's Supper and the celebration of that becomes important. So, right, if you want to participate and be a part of that, then you'll go through the initiation. You will do what you have to do in order to be a part of that. That's one set of understandings that's going on. Second place where we can look and see perhaps some of the things that are going on here about why the Galatians might want to be a part of this is chapter 6, verses 12 and 13. And again, I'll give you my way I would try to look at that. 12 and 13. Those who are wanting to make a good showing in the flesh, these are putting pressure on you to practice circumcision only in order that they not be persecuted for the cross of Christ. For not even those who practice circumcision themselves keep the law. But they are wanting you to practice circumcision in order that they may boast in your flesh. Okay. So, what's going on here? It seems that these new preachers are concerned about keeping or guarding the law. Paul insinuates, however, that they do not practice what they preach. They want the Galatians to practice circumcision despite the fact that they are already believers in Christ. Paul's opponents are not satisfied merely with expressing what they desire the Galatians to do, leaving it up to them, but are putting pressure on them to practice circumcision. Again, the nature of the pressure isn't specified. But two things seem to come through here, right? In other words, this. Practicing circumcision, law observance, is not simply a matter of choice. It becomes a necessary requirement, right? Galatians, this is what you have to do. And the other thing here that Paul seems to intimate, and the reason the pressure is on, is not for the sake of the Galatians, right, but for the sake of the new preachers. In other words, to put it in a very folksy way, it seems like they're keeping score. So in other words, I'm going to put pressure on folks in the Holden community that you have to attend these sessions. Not because it's good for you, not because I really care whether you're interested or not, but you see, if I can have more people attend my session than people attend all the other folks who teach Bible this summer, well, hey, I'm obviously the best, right? We're going for quantity, not quality.
And this is exactly what happened when the speaking in tongues element came through. It was the implication of superior knowledge. And if you are want to really be a Christian, you have to speak in tongues. And then from their viewpoint, they're getting the good points with God because they brought somebody else now really into the kingdom.
It's not really the, you know, again, Paul seems to say, and here the thing is, how seriously can we take Paul in this passage in terms of, is this just simply a rhetorical device? Is this hyperbole? Or is this actually what's going on? Again, very hard to figure out, but certainly what Paul wants to make it be, because again, right, the way Paul puts it forward, on the one hand, they demand that you observe the law, but on the other hand, right, he's saying, of course, you know, these guys don't practice what they preach. They're not really observing the law. Because you see, my dear Galatian friends, observing the law really isn't the issue. The issue is keeping score. Who's best? Because we know again, right, of course, all churches who increase their membership are obviously the better churches.
God's happy over
there. Right? God's happy, right? When church attendance goes up, that must mean we're all doing something right.
And in Peterson's version here, it's fascinating. It says, all their talk about the law is gas.
Well, it's an interesting thing because people either want to be right or have power. And in some ways, this suggests that being right is even more important than having power, if you follow that line.
Yeah, that's a good...
Yeah, it makes for a more interesting understanding of what was going on in the early church before the destruction of Jerusalem kind of shut down the Jewish connection to some degree, or not shut it down, but...
But the two are very closely aligned, aren't they, right? I mean, making sure you do the right thing is also the way that I might be able to gain power and control, or show that power and control that I have if it can be demonstrated.
And if I can't make you do the right thing, which is my thing, very often doing the right thing is not doing what somebody else says, but something I want you to do, then it's a sure sign that I don't have power.
Right.
Don't we have to be a little careful here, and I think you alluded to it, what is Paul doing? Paul is not talking to the Judaizers, it appears. And what happens when we're not talking one-on-one? We can build some pretty nice cases about what they're about, which I don't. So, you know, is it really a keeping score thing? It's rather a different understanding maybe it could have been resolved if they just sat down. It did in Jerusalem.
Well, except that
maybe.
Except that we take someone who's against us very much to heart. So the idea of winning an argument, it's years ago my kids saying, well, we don't want you playing Trivial Pursuit with us anymore because you win all the time. This idea of winning and being in charge is so powerful to our psyches, I think.
But the only reason I mention that is because my experience has been, when I'm not talking with the people, I build these powerful cases, and if I shoot them back and forth, the whole relationship deteriorates. But if we can sit down and talk together, the chances of us getting on a more common page is more likely. And so I had a little hard time with Paul.
My sense on this, Daryl, is I believe that Paul has the sense that his opponents are also going to hear this letter.
Yeah.
Because as you see the rhetorical setup here, and I'll point one out here in chapter 3, the moves, right? Paul knows this letter will be read aloud within the community, and certainly these folks are going to be there in the community, and there are certain parts of the letter where you can see very clearly he's talking to the Galatian Christians, but there are other places in this letter where you can see very clearly that he is talking to these new preachers who have come in. And part of that is some of the sophisticated arguing he does, particularly with regard to Abraham. Because remember, if these are Gentile Christians, they wouldn't know any of that kind of stuff. So why is he putting it all in there? He's putting it in there to tell these new preachers, you guys don't know at all how to interpret the scriptures. And, you know, good old Paul, graduate of Jerusalem U Pharisee school, is going to straighten you out on this. So listen up, boys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead and get through.
I'm wondering about the business of not just keeping score, but so that they may not be persecuted for the cross of Christ. That's why they're trying to get people circumcised, right? I mean, according to this, the text that you alluded to.
Right.
Here. So that's very interesting to me. Is it that as Jews, they are being, there's pressure outside of them, of that church, to get people to be circumcised, and Paul is saying that persecution is that the cross of Christ is enough for Gentiles to enter into the promise of Abraham. It's the cross of Christ, it's not the circumcision, and they're getting all this pressure to circumcise, right? And I guess somehow persecution comes in there somewhere. They're getting pressure from outside of themselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
No, that's a good point. That's exactly where I'm going to next, Paul.
Oh, okay.
Good answer. In terms of saying, okay, So we've got the keeping score and all of that, but what also is going on there, we'll just use this kind of term, right? Social displacement, right? So again, think about this. Here you are in Galatia, whatnot. We know, of course, if you're in Galatia, paganism, the kind of religions that are around, the practices you would have. Well, of course, right, to become Christian displaces you from all of that. In fact, it means it's probably going to break off relationships with a lot of friends. It might even be breaking off relationships with family. It could have repercussions with regard to civic offices or civic jobs, because again, we know within the Roman Empire and elsewhere, certain religions were considered legitimate, others were not, and so Christianity, of course, was not. So if you're practicing that, you might be out as Galatia's fire chief or whatever. So there's this social displacement at all of these different levels. And of course, what comes along with that, to be sure, is the insecurity, right? Because after all of us want to have a place to belong. So, right, these new preachers come to town and say, hey, look, Paul took you halfway. We'll say that these folks even had positive things to say about Paul. Paul took you halfway. Paul took you the hard step, right, to go, a little diagram here, from your paganism with yet identity in the context that followed into freedom in Christ. But that is only halfway. There is now step two. And what's step two? That's all that stuff that has to go, that goes back to Abraham and the covenant with circumcision, and the notion, right, the Mosaic law. And once you can become part of that, now you are fully, totally, completely Christian. But as well, it overcomes the social displacement, because although Jews are not the favorite bunch of folks within the Roman Empire, they are considered a legitimate religion, and you are not a persona non grata if you are a member of a Jewish community. So again, right, what they do, I think, is give you a sense of belonging and security. And a lot of us are willing to do quite a bit, including you know what, for belonging and security.
One of the things that just struck me as you're going through that is this whole, how we use New Covenant language and how often that whole concept, not necessarily the phrase, but Christianity as New Covenant becomes a clarification point for those under the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. And in the early church, it's a different, or even recognizing it as a different covenant. And because I think a lot of this, for me, with sin, it becomes an issue of under the Old Covenant, it's not so much breaking the rules, but me wanting to do things my own way, and or the right way. And that's where the competition kind of thing strikes me. So whether they really had a clear notion of this new covenant concept as separate from Judaism, and that was maybe the big sell, in some ways it didn't need to occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one thing, to point out with regard to covenant, with the whole sense of belonging and security. If you would turn to, let me find my reference here. Here we go. Genesis 26, verses 4 and 5. And if someone finds that faster than I did.
It's just a pause to heighten the joy of finding.
Yeah, to say, all that pause for just this. Genesis chapter 26, verses 4 and 5.
Do it. I will make your offspring as numerous as the stars of heaven, and will give to your offspring all these lands, and all the nations of the earth shall gain blessing for themselves through your offspring, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws.
Okay. Now that first part of that sounds pretty familiar, right? That's the typical promise to Abraham, the descendants and all. That's everything that Paul wants to pick up as well. But does anything in that passage strike you as unusual?
You mean the cause?
Huh?
You mean the cause?
Because.
The reason is because Abraham obeyed. Kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws.
Yeah, and why would that strike you as unusual?
Because I'm a Lutheran, I guess. the other thing that strikes me is above that, where it says these benefits are going to go to all people because of the offspring, is interesting.
Right, that's the promise side of that. But I want to go because Abraham kept my statutes, my commandments, and my laws. Now, why should that strike you as a bit unusual?
Is it Paul arguing here that it was because of the promise?
Yeah, but first of all, why should this strike you as unusual?
Abraham.
Yes, and why would that surprise you?
It doesn't say you should.
Well, all right. The answer is so simple, we're making it hard.
We're saved by grace, it's not by Abraham's faith. Yeah, because Abraham was before the law.
Yes!
Yeah.
Right, this statement says here that the promise comes, if you will crassly put, because Abraham kept the Ten Commandments. And you go, wait a second. The Ten Commandments, as I remember from confirmation, you know, didn't Moses kind of come after Abraham? How could Abraham keep the Ten Commandments and all those other laws? I mean, yeah, he's going to keep circumcision because God told him that as kind of a sign of the covenant and promise, but all those other commandments, you know, they came hundreds of years later. But you see, and again, we could go through 10, 12 verses in the Hebrew scriptures, that part of the Hebrew tradition is such that, of course, Abraham as the father is the righteous one. And Abraham is so righteous, as we see here in Genesis, and again, you can see in terms of source material, this is the later Deuteronomic kind of source material here. The understanding is what? Abraham is so righteous that he keeps the law. He observes the law even before the law is given. And so everyone, see? That's why we observe the law. Because that's what it is to be an heir of Abraham. To keep the law just like he did, even before it was given. Now, as Chris pointed out, Paul will have none of that.
We're going to have to quit singing Father Abraham.
And he's, right, this is what we have here in Galatians chapter 3, verses 6 to 8. And I'll just read that from the NRSV here for the sake of time. Chapter 3, verses 6 to 8. Just as Abraham believed God and it was reckoned to him as righteousness, so you see, those who believe are the descendants of Abraham. And the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, declared the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, all the Gentiles shall be blessed in you. You see, Paul is taking that exact same passage, that exact same promise, verse 4, but where the tradition here says, and righteous Abraham kept all the law before it was given, Paul goes, no, 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 no. Righteous Abraham by faith heard the gospel before it was ever written. So there. Right? It's a one-upmanship move. And this is, again, one of the passages, right, where I would say, you see, Paul is saying, these new preachers in Galatia are going to hear this, and I'm going to tell them what's really up. Right? The gospel precedes law. The promise is not, and Abraham is reckoned righteous, not because he kept my statutes and ordinances and commandments, but because God already showed him the gospel. Anybody want to argue with that?
It's an interesting gospel summary in this sense, right? We were talking about gospel summaries, because there's nothing about, we usually associate the gospel, right, with Jesus and the cross. And here he's saying, equating gospel with just promise as such.
Just with promise as such.
But it's a specific promise. Though.
Yes.
It's very interesting. The promise is that the Gentiles will also get in.
Yep.
It's
all
amazing.
Of them.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that it really is about the Gentiles, this gospel that Paul's talking about.
Yes. And at least, right, Paul's argument, right, what's at stake for Paul, therefore, is to say, back to this issue here, folks, mm-hmm. right, when you're grappling with insecurities, with displacement, with that sense of belonging, right, I want to assure you that the scriptures going all the way back to Abraham, what had you guys in mind? You were in it from the beginning. Right? God's grace is inclusive from the get-go. And if that ain't good news, nothing is.
Go ahead. So going back to your gatekeeper at the beginning, we talked about that. I mean, when you go back and you look at the Old Testament, and the promise was you will be blessed to be a blessing, right? And then the prophets are railing against them because they're blessed, but they're keeping everybody out. They're looking at it as a gatekeeper. You have to, it's only for us. And I think that's part of what they're complaining about is, wait a minute, the promise is you've been blessed to bless others and to give life. Mm-hmm. So the gatekeeper does need to get mm-hmm. out of the way.
Mm-hmm. And this also shows how Paul's whole program here is he's presenting Judaism.
Yes.
As he understands it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's not presenting Christianity over against Judaism. He's presenting Judaism as a gift to all people. In a way, through Christ and through Abraham.
But that is pretty radical, you saying that the first covenant is for includes everybody, because you don't hear that very often.
Yeah.
Paul said, I just read the text.
Right.
It's just what the text says.
It's true, because the normal story you hear is the first covenant was for the Jews, and then the second covenant came along and opened up all of us.
I know, and Paul said, boy, have you folks got that one wrong.
Yeah.
Well, even saying the first covenant apparently didn't work very well. So we're going to remodel it.
No, 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 no. He's saying that, you know, the first covenant is
only.
Look,
no, right. But not the first promise, but the law didn't work very well, right?
I see.
Yeah, no. But I didn't say it well. But that the law didn't work very well, so we do get this new covenant.
Yeah, but there again, right, is we'll look at that a little. Right, law's got a whole different function
for
Paul,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you're always in trouble when you understand the law as somehow that which,
right.
Again, right, leads
because keeping
to,
the law doesn't get salvation. That plan is out.
Right, because it's always...
You keep the law in freedom.
Right, salvation, blessing is always a promise. And again, that promise is the foundation of, right, the Jewish tradition, the Christian tradition. So again, right, Paul's argument here is, in this sense, there's no difference between us.
Right.
It's just Christ came along and made that very clear. So again, we understand how the Gentiles are in as well.
Well, it even strikes me within Judaism, there's differences on how closely must, you know, the whole Reformed conservative notion of how closely must we follow the law as well as the covenant is a problem within Judaism alone. I mean, it's other places, but it's even there.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting in this one is kind of going back to what Daryl said about being able to talk to each other and coming, you know, you may be able to find, and a lot of times when you get into debates within the church, you have one group has their set of texts that they quote, and the other group has their set of texts, and they're not, and they're arguing, kind of using scripture back and forth. In this one, Paul uses their texts.
Yes.
To show them that they're, he doesn't get another set of texts, he uses the same texts that they have, and says, wait a minute, you're misunderstanding.
Yeah, I mean, again, and of course, this is speculation, but one would say that probably what these new preachers are using and the scriptures they're citing are precisely these Abraham texts from Genesis. And Paul is, why out of all the things Paul could talk about in chapter 3 does he go to Abraham? Probably because his opponents are there, and again, he's going to set them straight. So you're right. Can my proof texts outdo your proof text? Paul's saying, no, I'm going to use your texts. I'm just going to tell you what they really mean.
Right.
So it is, of course, an issue of interpretation, but it is with the same texts. I'm conscious of our time. It's gone. If you want to stay, I had lots of work for you to do, which you're not going to do.
Oh, look at the time.
Look at the time.
Yeah, it's kind of like that wood pile I moved today. It'll still be there tomorrow.
Okay, but just a few, I mean, right, again, if you look at Galatians 3, here are the key topics now that work with Abraham. Blessing of Abraham, curse of the law. Promise to Abraham contrasted to the law of Moses. Who are the true offspring, right? That's all that Gentile stuff. Who are the true heirs? And all of this is, you can see again, I think, why both the Galatians and the new preachers are included. That if you look at this, right, Paul, at the end of each section, the last verse or the last sentence, always he wants to make his point with reference to the Spirit, right? And so, you know, we could look through, as you look at the, right, the point with reference to the Spirit is, and you tell me. The other thing is there's always an associative catchword. In Greek, the last word or phrase in each section becomes the theme for the next. Now, you would compose things that way, what? When you know you have an audience listening, so that they can follow through. So the last phrase in verse 14 is promise of the Spirit. And then note, here's our topic, promise to Abraham. The last word or phrase in verse 22, faith in Jesus Christ. And that then becomes the whole sense of the true offspring. Here then, last word is heirs. Then we've got who are the heirs. And so you can go through then, right, and say, what does Paul mean by promise, inheritance, heirs, divine sonship? And here, again, a bit of a quibble, NRSV, in that I know inclusive language is important. They talk about children of God. But in these instances, I think sonship is important to catch what's going on, because we're talking about adoption, and we're talking about adopting a son who would be the heir. And again, within that patriarchal context, sorry, women don't make it. And again, the exemplar of that is Caesar Augustus, because after all, right, Julius Caesar had no children, adopted Octavius, and of course, he becomes the heir of the empire. And so when we're talking about this, right, again, certainly a Greco-Roman audience has that as part of their pre-understanding. And so when you talk about divine sonship, right, we're talking about becoming heirs of God's reign and rule of grace, the kingdom of God, just like Octavian became the heir of the empire. So now we become heirs of God's kingdom, God's empire. So that's why I think sonship is still important. But again, right, note how often these words show up in just this little section as Paul drives home this point so forcefully, right, in terms of that interpretation of the promise to Abraham was already the promise to the Gentiles. Grace was foundational, faith was foundational from the very beginning, and therefore, right, it's not a two-step approach or anything. The whole thing is already there. And Paul's argument claimed that that is the only way you can truly address your insecurities and have that assured sense of belonging, which will provide it in a way that circumcision and observance of the law never will. All right, I'm going to stop. If folks want to stay and discuss a little more, that I'm open to that. And if you need to be off and doing other things, perfectly understand.
One thing that just hit me is when we look at the catechism, how little Luther focused on anything out of the Old Testament, as far as whether it's New Covenant language or New Testament language, but even the commandments, we've managed to, in some ways, refocus them on saying the rules you should abide by instead of language that fits the New Covenant, in a sense. And you can't just throw out everything after Abraham. But
right. Or the other thing, which Luther does, he brings it up more in the large catechism, is he reminds us, note that all the commandments are prefaced with, I am the Lord your God who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. In other words, again, they're all prefaced by that sense of deliverance, right? And because you have been delivered, therefore, right, you won't have other gods, you won't take my name in vain, you'll remember the Sabbath.
So that's even response language.
So again, it's much more response language in terms of you're observing it, not as faith commitment, but you're observing it in terms of it. It's what would naturally flow from what has happened to you and what you've received.
So, and it does, to me, and that's always been a tension, I think, even as a kid, to some degree, thinking of the whole notion of following the rules as opposed to grace. And
sure.
That's good stuff.
Because that's kind of the natural human tendency, isn't it? We figure, well, the way we're going to give everybody a sense of belonging and whatnot is follow the rules. Because if you don't know quite what to do, you're somewhat paralyzed. I thought about, you know, one illustration is our happy little wood crew, right? Glenn's not around to tell us what to do, so what do? Well, we just stand around and wait until Glenn comes along and tells us what
to do. So if we're doing this by the law,
we're observing the rules, you know? Glenn, tell us what to do, we'll go do it. If you're not there, we really don't have a sense of, do we belong here?
See,
I don't know.
We embraced it, the joy of doing it, the spirit-led grace of putting wood in that basement.
That's right.
Is what empowered us. Good. So hi.
Hi Paul, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. How are things going? Where are you? Are you stuck in?
Still up in Saskatoon.
Yeah. Uh huh. So what do you know about Volker and Susan? Anything?
Not much.
No,
they're doing quite well.
Okay.
They're in Regina.
Yeah.
Volker is academic dean
at
Luther College in Regina.
Okay.
Yeah,
he's
I'll
been,
be there
he's
when I
been
before.
That for about 3 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Quickly as possible.
Wow, that's good. Great.
Huh. I think kids have hit university age.
Right, yeah. One of their kids was... the last time I saw them, one of their kids was on a bit of a tour doing music, doing, what would you call that? He was playing in front of professors of faculty to see if he could get into their program.
Oh, auditions. So,
auditions, that's what it was. Yeah, he was doing auditions at various universities. So.
Hmm.
Pretty amazing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the younger one.
And when Volker's not being the administrator, his areas of study are still pretty much focused on Christian Muslim
mm-hmm.
relations.
Oh, okay, cool. Boy, I bet he's a hot topic.
He's a hot topic. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's a good person to be in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's so careful and articulate,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, he really is.
Doesn't just toss things out
mm-hmm.
in a sloppy manner.
Right,
so,
right.
You
and
know.
He's a really good listener.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's able to turn questions around and get the best.
And well, I mean, it's here too, but certainly Canada as part of the Commonwealth is. Many of our immigrants now are Muslim.
Oh, okay.
And there's they're even moving, believe it or not, to Saskatchewan.
We have a
pretty significant community both in Regina and Saskatoon.
Wow.
Of Muslims from Pakistan, Iraq, as well as from African nations, from the Sudan and places like that. Yep.
Wow. Hmm. Yeah, because, I guess where is that? I guess there's not really much in the Northwest. Seattle, maybe. Not much. But that's interesting. Huh.
Yeah, immigration patterns are a little different, right? Because the States, of course, gets any more from Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. We get them much more from India, Middle East.
China.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you get it.
Well, we probably
China
do too,
too.
But yeah, but in terms of the Northwest, I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of. Where in the places that I can think of? Huh. Well, are you on the board of Holden? Or
I was.
You were.
But
okay, I knew you were at one time.
I'm not on the board anymore.
Uh-huh.
Served my two terms. It's
probably a good time not to be on the board. I mean, this is really. I saw Chuck and Stephanie,
yeah.
And when I got off the boat, I mean, off the bus, I was like, wow, those people must have a lot on their minds. I mean, just seeing. I've been up here since they really started in earnest. So I'm like, wow, this must be mind-boggling to keep all of this going in your minds and what all needs to happen. And there's my daughter. Hey, Rosie.
Hey.
Rosie, have you met Michael?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we've been stacking wood for 3 days.
Oh,
She's our expert stacker.
I don't know how that happened, but just...
I don't know, but
I'm joking.
You've lived up to the reputation.
It's been fun. I love it.
That's good.
Yeah. Lasagna for dinner.
Wow.
What's for dinner?
Lasagna.
Lasagna.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we ready to eat?
I'm ready to eat.
We, yeah. Okay.
In terms of this, one of the big changes is food.
Yes, apparently.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, every morning you can have bacon and eggs or whatnot.
Kidding me.
And there's practically meat with every meal.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least dessert for supper, sometimes dessert for two meals.
Oh.
Remember, we used to have dessert only
on Sundays
and all of that. But this is, we're now eating high on for sure. But
you can't blame them for.
No, you can't. You can't blame them.
Wanting
but,
a little protein,
but
it is different for sure.
But it's certainly different than the typical Holden, and I don't have any qualms with the typical Holden cuisine, but
mm-hmm.
this is different.
Yes. Yeah. That's big doings, and that's a fun. It's kind of interesting that we were talking, because we were talking. Well, you've erased it, but. Table fellowship is a huge deal, and what is being served and who gets to eat it is all. It's still very fundamental to who we are. I mean, this food was a big deal for this community,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
So.
Yep. And the way, Or I know the first thing got off the bus and came in, and the person behind me goes, "My God, a pop dispenser."
Yeah, that's right. You know,
like,
yeah.
A pop dispenser in the dining hall?
I know, it's very weird.
You know?
Yeah.
Depending on your point of view, you've either gone to heaven or
you've gone to hell. Or the place has gone to hell.
The place has gone to hell.
Yeah.
But just, a little stuff like that.
Yep, very different.
Makes it different. But.
Someone put it a way that I really appreciated, that they said, it feels like it's so changing around here, but if you think about it, it's really going back to its roots.
That's
because
true.
It was when they were saying that it was so empty during the day because all the miners are away.
Yeah.
So it feels like a ghost town during the day. I mean, there's people around and they're doing things, but
mm-hmm.
no one's sitting around and chatting during, like most summers. And they said, well, you think about it, it feels real so weird that things are changing, but it's how it used to be. The mine, the men
mm-hmm.
would go work all day and that was it,
Mm.
And they'd come back in the evening and there'd be people here in the evenings, and so I was like, that's a good way to think about it.
It
really is.
And the stuff, the cafeteria is serving those men.
Yes.
Primarily.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's really what's happening here too. So, okay. So the rest of us have to deal with that.
But I mean, it seems to me that, now with long-term staff and, whatever, the 30 or 40 that are here
mm-hmm.
for the, renewal work and all of that, they've done a pretty good job of trying to keep the, the hold and flow of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, in terms of the meals and the worship and the,
mm-hmm.
you know, a couple sessions or whatnot.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And so I think they've
balanced
were
it.
Able to kind of preserve the rhythms of the village mm-hmm. without clashing.
Right.
With
right.
the I mean, I think they've worked very hard to have that sense of hospitality so that no one is really experiencing social displacement.
Yeah, right.
Right, you all have a sense of, yeah, okay, we both belong here and we'll,
mm-hmm.
we'll get along just fine.
Right,
and,
right.
I mean, for a whole 3 days, so of course I'm an expert.
Right? Hey, I've only been here 3 hours.
I mean, quite frankly, things
yeah.
seem to are going very well, very uh-huh. smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see where there's...
Yeah.
So I don't know, Rosie, you've been here longer, maybe you know.
I mean...
There's problems.
Not really. I mean, there's some people are really struggling with the food issue, especially like, you know, greens that aren't sourced locally. You know, it's like
yeah.
that this there's this sort of local identity of how we eat. Not
mm-hmm.
even that it's meat or that it's, but, you know, having cherries and not being able to say, we don't know where these came from.
Mm-hmm.
And that some people are really struggling with that. And I know there's issues with like composting, we're not composting. Just a
mm-hmm.
huge sort of identity crisis.
Yeah, no garbology.
I mean, right now, because they don't have their new composter up yet or anything, it's just everything
mm-hmm.
is going out in garbage.
And that's sort of a
you know, that's pretty unholden, but...
Right.
I mean,
it is. And so, yes, I mean, it kind of depends on who you ask. It's really interesting. I've been asking people individually.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's great, it's fun. And somebody's like,
well, Galatians is a great text to be reading in the in the midst of all of this, I think, you know? I mean, it might be pushing it a little bit, but I don't think too much to be saying, all right, to follow the law is part of what it means to be faithful and to follow what we know to be proper ways of living, doing your garbology, doing your recycling, doing all of that stuff. That's what it means to live faithfully. And then... I don't know, maybe. But at the end of the day, how do you judge yourself in all of that? And how do you judge the community? And, I don't know. It's interesting. You know. And what does gospel freedom speak into all of that?
Right, and the sense of how do you judge those for whom those kinds of observances are not relevant at all.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, that's... And I think here again the mining folks, the various groups are trying. I mean, they recognize this is a different place, but of course it's pretty hard for them to change procedures
mm-hmm.
too. But
sure.
but I think they're slowly trying to
to
work on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not necessarily any individual person. You know, like the kitchen wants to be. Composting or recycling or whatever,
right.
and it's just
yeah.
not, the procedures aren't put in place for them
right.
necessarily.
Right,
right.
Which
yeah.
is hard.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
The director's daughter is working in the kitchen.
Okay, that's working.
And
again, some of them, just kind of the pragmatics, right? You
mm-hmm.
pick your battles, and
yes.
some of these things, although they are important for us,
mm-hmm.
are really not worth having a fight over,
mm-hmm.
right? There's other things that will be more important to have to fight, and so, you know,
yep.
some of the things you just gotta swallow hard and say, well, 2 years,
yep.
we can grit our teeth,
uh-huh.
right?
Right.
Do it for 2 years,
exactly.
And then we'll get back to, right?
Well, that will be the real. These 2 years aren't all as interesting to me, as interesting as
right.
the year after everybody's gone. Then to see how strong the community ethos really was. You know, can we go back to this
mm-hmm.
or not? I mean, it's just very difficult to go back once you've gotten something. But it'll be interesting. I'm ready.
I'm hungry.
Yes,
okay.
Go in.
All right, okay.
All right,
no, you're not interrupting.